Several months ago, just prior to leaving on sabbatical, I had a revelatory moment, an inbreaking of truth, a piercing of the fabric of the everyday. And it involved this plastic spoon. Well, not this particular plastic spoon, but a nearly exact replica, as this spoon is one of millions, probably billions on this planet right now, it will do an adequate job of standing in. It was a beautiful spring Sunday afternoon in our parish hall, and we had just finished what we call continuing the feast, a shared meal together around table, and we were lingering in conversation. Several of us began to start to clean up. And as I was cleaning the place of one of our more seasoned parishioners, I went to clear away her spoon. And she stopped me. "You can leave the spoon," she said. "I'm going to take it home and use it again. I have a collection of them, actually. You see, I'm trying to avoid single-use items." And that's when it happened. That's when I stopped, momentarily broken open by this commitment to living a simpler, more observant life. I'm trying to avoid single-use items. Well, yeah, right. And all of a sudden, and friends, I'm sure that many of you, if not all of you, have already come to this realization, but all of a sudden in our parish hall with this plastic spoon, I had a vision. I saw all of the steps that it took to get that plastic spoon into my hand, the resources it took to make it, the petroleum, the waters, the chemicals that I can't even spell, the energy that it took to produce it, and then the fuel it took to move it from factory to distribution center to store to All Souls. And then after one brief hour of shining glory, I was ready, without thinking, to consign that spoon into what is now affectionately referred to as the waste management system, where it will sit, unreused, unreduced, unrecycled, for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. After 1 hour of single use. Over the course of this past summer, as my family and I made our way around the western United States, the sense that we took in from all those we encountered was the same. They had never seen weather like this. Wherever they were, it didn't matter the climate or the parallel, the sense of disorder was consistent. In southern Utah's Bryce Canyon, for instance, with its world-renowned rock formations that are called hoodoos, the winter temperatures aren't getting cold enough to freeze and fragment the rock. Within a few decades, they may not be able to form as they have for centuries. Then we went east to the plains and the peaks of Colorado, where they were deluged this spring by storm after storm after storm, causing severe flooding and the disruption of scores of species. Then further north, near the Canadian border, Glacier National Park may need to be renamed as the high alpine terrain where those famous glaciers have resided has gotten exponentially warmer with each progressing decade. Now, these, of course, are just a few points of data in what is a rising tide that is showing us that our climate is rapidly changing and growing more severe and unpredictable as it does. Now, for some, there is not enough evidence to prove human causation in this alarming trend. To the overwhelming majority of global climate scientists and to scientific laypeople like me, it is clear. It is clear that for over a century, we have been altering the climate of this earth to disastrous results. But even if you are not swayed by the growing evidence, there are many other unfortunate places that we can see the effects of human indifference to our own exploitation. That garbage patch in the Pacific Ocean where tons of the world's plastic pieces converge in an unholy confluence. Or the dead patch in the Gulf of Mexico where the rich nitrogen runoff of the fertilized farmland is carried by the Mississippi River into that gulf, causing algae to bloom and to kill most other species in the area. Or the destructive effects of heavy metals that are found in sources of drinking water around the world, though almost always located where the poorest, most vulnerable humans live. Now, you can make an argument that I am not a scientist. In fact, you can make a very good argument. But I do have a deep and abiding interest in moral theology. That is, why people live the way they do. What informs their decisions, forms their habits, orients their lives. It's an interest that I share with many, including the Bishop of Rome, who is also known as Pope Francis. In his recent encyclical, Laudato Si, on care for our common home, Pope Francis has eloquently and passionately called the human species to task. For our throwaway culture, for our mindless consumption, for our generation-to-generational impact of pollution of air and water, for our industrial and chemical waste that we have accumulated nearly unabated. He rightly sees our collective stance as a species, as one of objectification, and that it is a moral and ethical wasting disease. As a species, more often than not, we act as if the gift of this created world were simply objects awaiting our use and often abuse. Somehow, and I think Christianity has a part to play in this, at least an abuse of Christianity, but somehow we have come to see ourselves as outside of this creation, as if we didn't breathe the air of the atmosphere or drink the water that flows through our rivers or rely on this soil to produce our sustenance. And Pope Francis, along with many others, including our own Bishop Mark, sees a great breach in our common life. So, preacher, where's the good news? Well, despite the real and present danger that we face, I believe that hope abides. For time and again, we see in our sacred texts that we as a people have wandered far in a land that is waste. And time and again, we see in our stories witnesses to God's willingness to let us begin again, to make a new way of being. And in the Pope's letter, he points to a familiar source as a witness to this new way of being, that of his namesake, Francis of Assisi. And while the Pope acknowledges the love that Francis had for animals, right, it's in his honor that today, on his feast day, we hear all kinds of yips and barks because we bless all sorts of beasts. What Pope Francis finds in Saint Francis is what he calls an integral ecology, one that integrates all of creation into a loving gaze. Mosquitoes and bedbugs, not just bunnies and puppies. In Pope Francis's words, Saint Francis's response to the world around him was so much more than intellectual appreciation or economic calculus. For to him, each and every creature was a sister united to him by bonds of affection. That is why he felt called to care for all that exists. Unlike our often domesticated version of Francis of Assisi that you'll see in statuary, the Pope is actually calling us to remember the radical nature of St. Francis. Radical as in radix, or the root. Radical as in Francis's refusal. Okay, here I'm going to use Pope Francis's words again. Because St. Francis had a refusal to turn reality into an object simply to be used and controlled. And this is why the witness of Francis of Assisi can be our guide in this, our unnatural wilderness. For Francis lived from this radical sense of interrelatedness, a sense of kin with those who were excluded, like that leper along the road. A radical sense of kin were those who were seen as enemies when he went to make peace with Saladin in Jerusalem. A radical sense of kin with all the created. Francis was a strange dude. He would sing to the flowers. He would preach with the birds. But it was this radical, this deeply rooted nature of Francis to show us one of the most profound sense of communion that we can encounter. For this sense of communion really isn't about caretaking the world, friends. It's about knowing and acting from such a sense of relatedness to all that is that we believe we will know God and be known by God only as we are in right relationship with all the creatures, the other created beings of this world. And so it's with this sense of relatedness in mind that I would like to bring another image into our conversation alongside our plastic spoon. And this image comes from our gospel today from Matthew, and it's the image of a yoke. Now, a yoke, just to remind us, is not just what you might find in an egg. As I was discussing this sermon yesterday with one of my sons, he was a little bit confused about this yoke. And so what I talked about is how a yoke, as you know, is an instrument that you use with a beast of burden, right? And so you would pull a plow with this. You would take two oxen side by side and you would harness them together so that the two could work as one. Now, what is strange about this passage, though, what is unlike what our expectations of a yoke might be, right? You might expect a yoke to be harsh or uncomfortable or burdensome. But the yoke that Jesus offers is actually easy, and the burden it pulls is light. And this is the startling truth about the life of Francis, and a truth that we hardly seem to grasp in this 21st century, especially in the United States, as we lead lives of breakneck pace and grinding burden. The truth is this, that true freedom comes when we are yoked, one to another, yoked to God, yoked to each other, yoked to the myriad beings of creation. The truth is that when we live in communion with the world in which we have been created, lives where our appetites are self-limited, where we turn our attentions to the common good, this is when the yoke is easy and the burden is light. As the Orthodox Patriarch Bartholomew has said, it is a way which entails learning to give and not simply to give up. It is a way of loving, of moving gradually away from what I want to what God's world needs. It is liberation from fear, greed, and compulsion. But to be honest, friends, this, by and large, this is not the American way. It's why there are factories in China and Bangladesh and Mexico pumping out iPhones and T-shirts and plastic spoons for cheap. For many of us, we have grown accustomed to having what we want, when we want it, or at least in 2 days. Right? And soon, same day by drone. But friends, not only is this way of life not sating our desires, I mean truly sating our desires, but it is destroying that which God has made and is still making. Destroying the billions of cycles and the stunning diversity and complexity. We are in peril because of our relentless appetites and our lamentable indifference. One more time. So, preacher, where's the good news? Well, I have to say, as a priest in the Anglican Communion, this day I hear good news in the Bishop of Rome, Pope Francis. Yes, I have difference with some of what he has written, but he is as close to living a witness to the all-encompassing love of Francis of Assisi and Jesus the Christ as many I have seen in a long time. And he is not alone. There are many around the world, people who are claiming many faiths or no faith at all, who are speaking, acting, and reforming themselves and the lives around them for the common good of our creation. And this spirit of reformation is being kindled here at All Souls. For this past year, we have been in study in our teaching hour about our role as stewards, as co-creators. Classes at this hour have stoked imaginations and hearts of many, and so this summer, the first meetings of the All Souls Climate Action Group began. Energy is building, actions are coming clear, like a film series led by Margaret Sparks, and a course on practices, everyday practices to steward this earth that will be led by Jesse Titchener this winter. We are looking to partner with other groups in our area for best practices and advocacy in the state and nation. We will be studying Pope Francis's encyclical, and today, in just a few moments, we will be blessing our brand new solar panels, which just this month came online and are giving power, renewable energy, to the grid as a start. Make no mistake, friends, this will be the challenge of our lifetimes and those who follow us, right? This is obviously more than just about plastic spoons, as much as this might be iconic. If what we have begun to glimpse is any indication of what will come, it will try us as a species and as a world, perhaps like never before. But like Pope Francis, I draw hope. I draw hope not simply from the technological solutions, though they will help. I draw my hope from the working of the Creator in and among us, for our repentance, for our drawing close to reformation, the long-term and often difficult road of our lives working to the common good. I draw hope from that same God who, in the words of Pope Francis, who loves us so much and is always present, who does not abandon us, who does not leave us alone, for he has united himself definitively to our earth, and his love constantly impels us to find new ways forward. Praise be to God. Praise be to God indeed for this earth, this creation that is not single use. Let us get to work.